Hi, welcome to week six of
The Bitchery of History. Thanks for coming along. We've got so many more amazing women to tell you about.
Yes, we do.
The well has not run dry yet.
Absolutely not.
Which is awesome.
We're going to be talking about badass women forever.
Hollywood, take note. No more sequels, no more remakes. Just badass women.
Oh my God. I mean, just going through this week was especially hard for me. Because I kept switching, and you know this because I kept texting you about it, but I kept switching from person to person and back to the same person, and I'm doing the person I originally picked. It's just tough.
Because you run across so many amazing stories, and you're like, oh my gosh, I gotta tell this one. For those of you just joining us, my name is Allison.
And I'm Max.
And I'm going to be talking to you first today about an amazing Russian badass bitch named Maria Oktyabrskaya. Apologies if that is not the correct pronunciation, but I think I did pretty good.
Absolutely.
So, Maria Oktyabrskaya, she was born on August 16th in 1905 in the Crimean Peninsula.
Uh-huh.
She was one of 10 children in a peasant family.
Dang.
So, we already probably know her. Early childhood and early life was tough.
Mm-hmm.
In 1925, she married a Soviet army officer. And then while she was married to her husband, she began to acquire an interest in military matters and affairs. She became involved in the Military Wives Council. She trained as a nurse in the army. But she also learned how to use some weapons and drive vehicles. She just got really super into it.
Fantastic.
She said, quote, marry a serviceman and you serve in the army. An officer's wife is not only a proud, but also a responsible title.
Fantastic.
So she was already in it.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, she got relocated at some point during the Second World War. And for 2 years was way out in nowhere, Russia's town.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 2 years while she was here for her to learn that her husband had been killed in battle.
Oh,
so she didn't know for 2 years. Just, I guess, didn't hear from him,
right.
Didn't hear from the army, just had no idea. Just going on with her life during the Second World War. And when she found out about this, she sold all her possessions, used all of the money to buy a tank, and donated it to the Red Army and said, please name this tank the Fighting Girlfriend, and also, P.S., please let me drive it.
Yes.
So, the Red Army was like, okay.
Sure.
I guess. Thanks for the tank. So she went through a 5-month training course, driving the tank, using the weapons, all of this, and then went into her first battle.
I'm obsessed.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Her first battle involved her maneuvering her tank just like a pro. Like a total veteran. She was the first of her brigade to breach the enemy positions.
She
took
was
out, oh yeah, oh hugely. She's taking out Nazi artillery guns all over the area. Now, also in this very first battle, her tank gets hit and something breaks down. Some mechanical failure happens. So disobeying orders, she goes, well, it's broken. I've got to fix it. Climbs out of the tank in the middle of a battle while guns are being fired all around her and proceeds to repair the tank.
Oh my God.
And then keep driving and take out more people and just be a complete badass. Which is why I'm also feeling that I should nickname her Furiosa in real life.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, sorry, you shot my tank. Well, I guess I'll just fix it while you try and shoot at me.
What am I going to do, sit here?
Right.
No.
The Fighting Girlfriend. You are not going to stop me. I am so pissed.
She's a real life Inigo Montoya.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Hello. You killed my husband.
Prepare to die. I will take you out with my tank. So one of the reasons that the army decided to allow her to drive this tank was because they knew that there would be great publicity opportunities with it. But still, like, no one knows this story. This is incredible.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to watch a World War II movie with a girl, like,
driving
a tank, and killing Nazis?
That's,
everyone wants to watch that.
It's the only movie I want to watch.
So during her first battle, while she was under gunfire and disregarding orders and repair the tank, she was promoted to the rank of sergeant and then just continued to fight in more battles and take out Nazis and just drive her tank.
That's fantastic.
Never take no for an answer. Sadly, during one of these battles, again, her tank was hit and she again leapt out to repair it, but then was hit and was in a hospital in a coma for 2 months And then she passed away. So she died essentially in battle in World War II. And the following August, she was awarded the Hero of the Soviet Union Award in recognition of her bravery in battle.
Wow.
So she lived kind of a short life.
Yeah.
But man, she made the most
of
it.
She made her mark, yeah. This kind of reminds me of the strategy that I tell people when they're trying to talk to me about when they're for like some kind of political movement or they're for this or they're for that. I look at them and I say, okay, well, tell me how it's going to make the person you want to do it. Tell me how it's going to make them money. That's the only way you're going to get anything done.
Yeah.
Tell them how it benefits them. So like she literally bought a tank and was like, I want to fight. I have my own tank.
Can you just train me and let
me
do it?
And they went, sure.
Yeah, that's fine.
Anyone have a problem? No?
Nope.
Great.
Yeah. First battle. First of her brigade to breach the enemy line.
And she jumped out.
Yep.
She went, no, this tank is broken. I know how to fix it.
And I will fix it. And then I will mow you
exactly
Nazis down.
Right.
Thanks. So
that's
awesome. Maria Oktyabrskaya. Coming soon to a theater near you. We hope.
We hope. After banging Eleni.
Yes.
So this week I'm going to be talking about the Holy Righteous King Tamar of Georgia.
Whew.
Again, we found ourselves for the second week in a row finding people from the same region of the world. So we're also in...
The former
USSR. So this
USSR.
Week we're in the former USSR, or Eastern Europe. So Tamar of Georgia was the daughter of King Georgie III of Georgia. George of Georgia.
Georgie the king.
Georgie of Georgia. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Who put down a rebellion in 1178 of noblemen who tried to take him down.
Cool.
And when I say he put down a rebellion, I mean he cut off all their heads.
As you do.
And in order to cement his rule, he named his daughter as co-ruler, Tamar. So she takes the title king because at the time, the word queen in their language signified a lesser position.
Mm-hmm.
Than king. Just the word itself.
They didn't play chess.
They didn't play chess. Exactly. And so she becomes co-ruler in 1178. And during her coronation, he gave her a crown and a naked sword and told her to ruthlessly go after any who would challenge their rule again. So they ruled together for 6 years. And then her father passes away.
Mm-hmm.
Georgie of George passes away. And almost overnight, both the nobility and the church start to foment rebellion again.
Right.
They say, you're a woman, you can't lead by yourself, we're not going to let it. And so she goes, oh yeah? And she sends women negotiators to the nobles who were in charge of the rebellion after arresting the royal treasurer who was the head of the rebellion, whose office, by the way, was literally down the hall from the throne room. So
oh
he's
my goodness.
Fomenting rebellion literally right down the hall from
oh.
her from where she sat.
Oh, snap.
So she sends these female negotiators to these nobles and distracts them by saying, you know what? I don't want any harm to come to you. Let's figure something out. And so these women, their job really in secret is just to distract the nobles until her army can get there.
By distract, do we mean sleep with?
No. They were negotiating a truce and a new
They were
power.
Letting the women do that?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, this is way
yeah.
better.
I mean, she's a woman in charge of, you know, at this point.
All
she's,
right, all right,
so
calm down.
She sends these female envoys to distract these nobles. And when the army shows up, the women are like, ha, psych. And Tamar strips them of their power, title, rank, nobility, everything. And puts new people in her place. She doesn't kill them either. She pardons them. But she takes away their
yeah.
livelihood and everything.
Yeah.
With the church, she does something different. She calls a great holy synod, which is a meeting of all the Eastern Orthodox heads of the church.
Right.
And I found this great quote where she stands up in front of the synod and she says, "Begin with me. If I sin, I should be censured, for the royal crown is sent down from above as a sign of divine service. Allow neither the wealth of the nobles nor the poverty of the masses to hinder your work. You by word and I by deed, you by preaching and I by the law, you by upbringing and I by education will care for those souls who God has entrusted to us, and together we will abide by the law of God in order to escape eternal condemnation, you as priests and I as ruler, you as stewards of good and I as the watchman of that good." Basically, standing in front of them and going, you stay in your place, I'll stay in my place, and we'll be fine.
You do you, bruh.
Exactly. And at the end of the General Synod, they had successfully voted out of positions of power every single priest who had spoken against Tamar.
Oh, this is so good.
So she gets the church to align with her completely bloodlessly. Right?
I'm in love.
So now that we're at peace with the ruler, it's time to get married. Because at this point, marriage wasn't a choice. She had to get married.
Right.
So in association with the clergy and the nobility, they choose... His name is Yuri. He was a prince from a place called Novgorod. He's a Russian Viking.
Oh, yes.
And...
Yes.
He was actually kicked out of Novgorod before he got... Like, he was a banished prince, essentially. But before they got married, he was, like, the epitome of what a good prince to be. He was well-spoken. He was good in battle. He was everything you could want in a king.
Right.
So they get married, and because he would become king, mm-hmm. in order for her to remain the sole ruler,
mm-hmm.
she takes upon her marriage the title the Queen of Kings. So even though she is married and he's the king, she still retains power. And this pisses Yuri off. Because at this point,
yeah.
we're not sure exactly, because this is the 12th century, so we're not exactly sure how he reacts to it. But what is known to historians is that he becomes a huge drunk. He becomes incredibly violent and destructive.
Mm.
And so less than, not even 3 years into their marriage, she strips him of his power, gets the church to annul their marriage, and banishes him from Georgia.
Bye, Felicia.
Yuri is incensed. He's completely enraged. And he raises an army of Vikings, Turkish mercenaries, and nobles who were still disgruntled from when Tamar
right.
took power.
Right.
And on two separate occasions, attacked Tamar and her forces. And Tamar just laid waste to them on both occasions. Just completely and utterly destroyed
Denied.
Them. Exactly.
Unsubscribe.
Nope. Unfollow. And so to add insult to injury, after she completely crushes her ex-husband in battle, she marries her top general, who was in charge of that campaign.
Oh, you go, girl.
Exactly. Just to be like, you know what? You.
Yep.
So this man, who Tamar's aunt describes as hewn from stone and reared on wolf's milk, is a semi-barbarian named Davit Sosland Bagrationi.
Whoa.
I'm sure that's not pronounced correctly, but what matters is that for the next 10 years, under their rule, Georgia flourishes.
Mm.
They enter a golden era. This is the height of Georgia. They become a power that is known by both the Christian West and the Muslim East as far away as Asia.
Wow.
They're known as the power in Eastern Europe.
Whoa.
Along with the Persians. So they have two children at this time. And this one sultan in the area, his name's Abu Bakar. He's a Persian king from Azerbaijan, he gets real worried about this growing influence from this woman
mm-hmm.
king.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets a joint force together from a bunch of the Muslim nations around.
Right.
And again, Tamar completely and utterly destroys them.
Ugh.
In those 10 years, they together annex parts of Azerbaijan, Turkey, Armenia, and Byzantium. And they destroy so many civilizations in their quest for domination that one Georgian writer in a surviving writer or
mm-hmm.
writing from the time
right.
comments, "We are conquering places I have never heard of."
That is the coolest description of all time. That's so cool.
And so their kingdom slowly spreads outward to the point where tons of wealth and gold just
of course.
Add to this golden age that they're living. Art, literature, and poetry explode everywhere. Tbilisi, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, that's her capital city,
mm-hmm.
becomes one of the largest cities in the Middle East with trade routes to Far Asia, to Beijing, and into Western Europe. And what's really great about her is that even when she wasn't campaigning, she was an incredible badass bitch. She would embroider clothes, hand embroider personally made clothes,
mm-hmm.
and then give them to the poor. They were only for the poor.
Are you kidding me?
She would also went out in person to distribute those clothes and alms to the poor as well. and to veterans during times of war. She religiously fasted and observed the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
She slept on a stone bed as a form of penance, and she frequently went barefoot at times of great importance as an act of humility. During one of the great battles when she defeated one of the many sultans who tried to destroy her, she is known for walking, for leading her army to the gates of her city barefoot to meet the opposing forces.
Oh my god. So she's actually been fighting in all of these battles.
Oh yeah, she's been there. If not fighting directly, at least overseeing.
Okay.
And if it's not her, it's her husband leading the charge.
Ugh.
So the biggest moment, and like the moment that kind of just cemented her in badass history.
Yeah.
In 1203, yet another sultan, Rukin al-Din, amasses this huge force, double the amount of people, not just soldiers, like people. In this capital city. They camp outside the city and they send a messenger in to give Tamar a message.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly insulting. I'm not going to really go into all of what they said because some of it does survive, but they basically call her feeble-minded and a simpleton.
Mm-mm.
And he gives her an ultimatum at the end of the letter. And he says, either you surrender now, convert to Islam, and I'll marry you. Or cleave to your Christianity, and I'll make you a concubine. Either way you live. And the message is so insulting that one of her generals, the generals that took over for David when he became her husband, are these brothers called the Makargalidze brothers. That's definitely not pronounced right. There's no vowels in that name.
We're getting close, guys.
And
I did not realize there's a prerequisite in Eastern European Russian languages needed for today's podcast.
He's so offended by this message that he completely ignores the tradition of not harming messengers, walks across the room, and slaps the man so hard in the face that he knocks him unconscious. The only thing that stops him, as he's like standing over the man's unconscious body, he says, if it wasn't for the rule of no harming ambassadors from foreign nations, he said, we would cut out your tongue and burn your eyes out with a hot poker.
Oh, stop.
And so Tamar, realizing what's happened,
sends
the sultan this huge gift as like a, we're sorry, we shouldn't have attacked. Like tons of gold. Really sends this more than nice response.
Right.
But she sends a letter with it that says, your proposal takes into consideration your wealth and the vastness of your armies, but fails to account for divine judgment. While I place my trust not in any army or worldly thing, but in the right hand of the Almighty God and the infinite aid of the cross, which you curse, the will of God and not your own shall be fulfilled, and the judgment of God and not your judgment shall reign. And she obliterates his army. Obliterates, like destroys them. There's stories that I found of her army fighting in mud up to their waists. The mud was so heavy that their horses, most of the knights had to dismount because their horses just couldn't move. And there's this moment in the battle where they're all in waist-deep mud. The entire Georgian force is in waist-deep mud. They're being beaten back into this bog. And out of nowhere, these two huge cavalry forces flank both sides, and the tide turns and they win.
Where did those forces come from?
They were just riding up from the side, probably. I don't know.
They were just lying in wait.
Probably.
Waiting for the opportune moment.
It's like that moment in Lord of the Rings. When the ghost army comes and they're like, ha-ha!
We got you.
Right, exactly. That's probably what happened. That's where it comes from.
Oh, man.
And so that's basically like the moment when everyone went, okay.
We're going to let you be.
We're going to let you be. She dies about, it's like 4 or 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Her daughter takes over.
Yes! Praise to the daughters.
And reigns for another 7 years. Before Genghis Khan finally destroys
Georgia.
Basically,
Wow.
But what a story, right?
That's an HBO miniseries.
That is an HBO miniseries.
That's it.
That would be just as successful as The Tudors, which I'm currently obsessed with.
Do you have any other quotes that you want to share from her? I don't have any other quotes from Maria.
Oh no, those were them.
Yeah. It's hard when they are, when English isn't the native language, it's not as, quotes are not as available. I'd be curious, I mean, if you can, if I was able to Google in Russian and type in Russian. You know what I mean?
Well, for Maria, it's probably a lot of screaming. Like a lot of, like half out of the tank, helmet, sort of half off her head, fist in the air.
with the wrench.
Guns a-blazing.
Fixing the tank as it's driving.
Absolutely.
Ugh.
And it's also hard to find quotes when your person's from the 12th century.
Yes, that is your excuse. So do we want to talk about today in history then?
Absolutely.
We've got some really, really cool ones this week.
We do. First and foremost, March 9th, which is in 2 days, is the birthday of Barbie. It's Barbie's birthday.
Hey.
March 9th, 1959, Barbie makes her debut at the International Toy Fair in New York City.
I never really had Barbie growing up, and I feel like there's a lot of people, almost sort of myself included, that kind of look down on Barbie as being mm-hmm. sexist and having, mm-hmm. you know, unrealistic proportions and all of this. But they have been doing,
they've been doing their
rebranding. Yeah. And what's been so interesting for me is having so many of my friends on Facebook that did grow up playing with Barbies
mm-hmm.
posting the commercials and actually saying, don't talk down to my Barbie. It inspired me, you know, the scientist one right. or whatever inspired me to go into science or become sure. a doctor, or become a vet. And as a young girl,
mm-hmm.
we weren't realizing that sure. this was an unrealistic beauty standard.
Absolutely.
So all of that to say, all right, Barbie, keep on keeping on.
Exactly.
Keep inspiring.
And I do also want to say that as far as I'm concerned or what I think about Barbie is that it's really just a case of them being a little misguided for a long time. As opposed to this is the female standard of beauty or like
right.
this is what the female body should look like. Because the Barbie story from the beginning has been about this self-made woman who does all these different things and goes out and explores the world. I think is just a little misguided, which they have realized lately,
yeah.
just like we just talked about.
Yeah. We also have on 1993, March 11th, she was sworn in on the 12th, so it covers both days this week. Janet Reno was confirmed and sworn in as the first woman to hold the office of U.S. Attorney General.
Big moment.
Very big.
Big moment. Also on the 12th, the 12th is a big day. March
yeah.
12th is a big day in women's history. DeWorld becomes the first and only, to this day, only opera performed at the Met, written by a woman. And that woman was Dame Ethel Smith.
This was 1903?
This is 1903.
So 113 years later, Metropolitan Opera.
Get on it.
Also on March 12th in 1912, Juliet Lowe organizes the first Girl Guide troop in the U.S.
Yeah.
And of course, a year later, changes the name to the Girl Scouts.
The Girl Scouts.
Buy your cookies.
I love the Girl Scouts. My sister's a Girl Scout and my stepmom is...
I was a Girl Scout growing up and my sister.
That explains so much. I don't think I've ever met someone who I knew was a Girl Scout that I didn't like.
Thanks. What term are we going to define today, Max?
This week.
Ooh, I'm going to have a lot
week.
To say on the subject.
This week we are talking about catcalling versus complimenting.
Here's what I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to yell it, if you have to say it out the window of your car,
mm-hmm.
if you have to use your horn
mm-hmm.
of your car to announce it, it's not a compliment. There is no world in which yelling something at me out of your car while I walk down the sidewalk is a compliment.
Right. Or even just polite.
Never polite, but
right.
it certainly does not make me feel good.
Exactly.
I want to know.
No, exactly, yeah.
I'm going to just go on a rant here.
Please.
So
I'm going to sit back.
And I'm not even going to apologize
Please.
For it because I have a lot to say on this subject because I want to know what are the men thinking that
mm-hmm.
do that? Like, honestly,
mm-hmm.
I honestly, truly want to know what are they thinking? Do they think that they are paying us a compliment? Because it makes us feel, at least it makes me feel,
mm-hmm.
and many of my other friends who are also women, feel like a piece of meat.
Mm-hmm.
Like we
it's
are
grody.
Not, it's gross. It makes us feel gross. It makes
mm-hmm.
us feel like we are nothing more than what you see on the outside or in a flash as you drive past us. It just makes you feel
yeah.
completely worthless and ashamed. It shouldn't make you feel ashamed, but it does.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel like, oh, I guess I can't wear this outfit today.
Right.
Or, oh, too bad. Oh, I shouldn't have put on makeup today.
Exactly. It's a big question of intention for me.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, makes the difference between catcalling and complimenting. Because
mm-hmm.
they are close. I think catcalling is complimenting with the intention of, hey, baby, let me get into your bed. Or let me get into your pants.
Right.
And so the difference for me is catcalling is gross because it's that shirt is great. It looked great on the
floor
of my room is the like unsaid subtext of that.
Right.
As opposed to, hey, that shirt's great. Where'd you get it?
Yes. And I will also say that we as women generally know what your intention is.
Absolutely.
And we can read that subtext. So just make sure it's a genuine compliment before you start complimenting because
mm-hmm.
then we will know that it is not genuine and it will turn us off and make us want to vomit.
You ain't slick.
Yeah. And it will make us want to never wear wear that outfit again, honestly. Mm-hmm. It will make me go, I don't want to wear this dress, or I don't want to wear this dress today or these pants today because somebody catcalled me in it once. Mm-hmm. And it blows my mind. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. One time I was wearing pink tights, a brown skirt, and just like a baseball t-shirt. I was volunteering at a film festival, so I'm wearing my volunteer t-shirt.
Right.
It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm completely exhausted. I do not look gorgeous or anything. I promise you. I heard a man walk past me, and I heard him say, I like to look at nice young girls sometime and give myself a nice fantasy. He walked away too fast. And the thing that's so frustrating too is when it happens to you, you're always so shocked and so taken aback by it that you do not usually have the time to formulate any kind of response or defense.
Which is probably where that's coming from, the, oh, well, people love it.
Right, because we're just looking at you going, oh my God, how can you think that's appropriate to say?
Right.
And we're so just thrown for a loop that we can't come up with something to say to you. And also, especially on the street, especially, you know, at night or somewhere, even if we do think of something to say, we probably won't, because then we will be afraid that you will follow up on that catcall and you will take advantage of the situation. Which is why I walk around with pepper spray. And the number of men that have asked me why I walk around with pepper spray recently has also started to bother me. Because I live in Los Angeles and I am a woman.
Yeah, even in Greensboro, I told people to...
Oh, of course. I am strong and I am confident and I absolutely feel that I can take care of myself. But I was running one morning and had someone ride by on a bicycle and smack me on the butt. And now I go, okay, well, I guess I won't ever go outside without pepper spray again. And thank goodness nothing worse happened, but it still ruined my entire day because who thinks that that is okay?
Right.
It's not okay. It's not okay. If you wouldn't say it to your mother or your sister, don't say it to a woman. And also, if you wouldn't say it to another person, don't say it, because you shouldn't respect us because we're your mothers or your sisters or your daughters. You should respect us because we are your fellow human beings.
It's the same exact argument for people who leave mean comments on the internet.
Ugh.
If you wouldn't stand there and look into my eyes and say that to me and then just stare at me for like 5 seconds afterwards, if that would make you feel bad, then you shouldn't say it.
Yes.
Now, there are times and ways to compliment a person, male or female or otherwise.
Yes.
That is appropriate. I work at Banana Republic. Mm-hmm. And all the time I look at women, because it's a clothing store, and I say, I love your top. Where'd you get it? Or, your hair is great. What product do you use?
Yes.
Those are compliments.
It's compliments, but you see, it's genuine. Women are the strongest people in the world because our entire bodies, our entire minds, and the entire system of basically every society is designed to work against us. The fact that we get up every day and we still beast it, just bow down already.
Exactly.
Okay? Oh, we're awesome.
I am. I do.
Which is why we started this podcast.
Primarily.
Because we kill it. We kill it every day.
That's why I love women. I just love women.
Even though you still won't go straight for me.
No, it's not happening.
Well.
Nope.
So, on that note.
I'm so sorry. You know I would.
I know you
in
would.
In a heartbeat.
I know you would. On that note, thank you for listening. That is a genuine compliment.
It really
is. We truly appreciate all of our listeners, all of you who've been following us on Facebook, who have subscribed on Stitcher and Podomatic, who are reviewing us on iTunes. We really deeply appreciate it.
We absolutely do. We also want to set out a call for your stories about the badass women in your life. One of the things we want to do with this podcast is highlight those badass bitches who weren't the Queen of Georgia or who weren't
Russian fighting tank sergeants.
Exactly. I want to know about your aunt who chased off a band of ruffians from her town and saved the town. I want to know about that. And I know Allison does too. Exactly. So leave us those comments on Facebook or Podomatic or iTunes. We'll see them. I promise you. For those of you who aren't following us already,
if you'd like to keep in contact, find us on Facebook. Just search The Bitchery of History. On Instagram and Twitter, also just search The Bitchery of History. You can also find us on our website. Go to thebitcheryofhistory.com. You can see pictures of us. You can find more places to download the podcast, and you can buy some stickers as well.
We couldn't make this podcast happen without our incredible team, especially Jess, Jeanette,
and Sydney.
The Bitchery of History is a production of Ursula Major Productions.
And as a reminder,
bitches get stuff done.